Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as...
Like Jesus Christ and Judas. Like, it doesn't get gayer than that. Like, bitch gets invited to, like, this big gay party. Everybody's eating a lot and drinking wine that appeared out of nowhere from fucking water, you know? And then Christ is like, one of you shady bitches is going to betray me. And then Judas is like, I don't give a fuck. I'm still going to make out with you. And then he dies. So it doesn't get gayer than that.
Oof. That sounds like an Almodovar movie.
It definitely.
What's poppin', chingona? Was good.
Muchas cosas. that's my own personal accent from Chihuahua.
Chihuahua.
Speaking of Chihuahua, we have a special Chihuahuense here in the house today.
Hey.
Air horn.
Que show, que show, que show. Cabrona, chingonas, pendejas, prostis, todas las de above.
Air horn was good. Yo, it's an honor. This is like my first time being like sharing airspace with you.
That's right. Oh, because God. Last time when we talked about Sor Juana, it was just with Maite. That's right. Yeah. This is awesome. So, no. The honor is mine. I love your podcast. I have to confess that I've been, I haven't listened to a lot of podcasts lately because it's, you know, like, all of a sudden I fucking grew up, and now I'm a professional, so I can do shit now, but I'm always down to participate, to support, and here I am, and this is the perfect opportunity, because I've been waiting for this half of my life.
Chingo, half your life? Yeah, I mean, I've had you on here before, and... We talked about before how you kind of like were the ones who kind of discovered us through the podcasting world. And then it became a whole thing. And now Latinos who lunch and cabronas y chingonas are like star-crossed lovers. And
I remember the first time I listened to you all. I was driving to my sister's house. I remember like the cement paved houses and streets. Shit. I remember the landscape. And I remember, I think it might have been Fry Papita who's like, ew, it was so disgusting. It was a straight kiss. And I was like, yes. That's when I knew.
Yes. So straights are banned forever.
Amazing.
Yeah, I remember it very well. And I'm like, Fabi, you got to listen to this shit. So I'm very happy.
I became obsessed with y'all when y'all did the chilaquiles and Netflix episode. Like, that was everything for me. So
damn, that seems so long ago. Okay,
that was so long ago.
Here goes a soliloquy. I don't know how it's gonna be taken, but I don't give a fuck. So recently I have been burned out with representation politics, and this is real, because it's been it almost seems like a downhill battle, because I cannot critique without being labeled as a hater in public events, in school, and that is reflected in a lot of areas of my life. I have recently been rejected from like a lot of shit that I apply to, and battling against the empire, it's fucking real. My part of that war is to teach youth about the perils of a lot of this shit, a lot of this coloniality. And that's just quoting a scholar, Aníbal Quijano, who talks about how we continue the same colonial processes to this day. So for me to see that stuff being developing in media, and how fighting and pushing, and now a lot of progress has happened, it got to me. It got to me to the point that I quit social media. I stopped my Netflix subscription, and I have transitioned to anime. That shit's too far. It doesn't affect me as much. I mean, they have their pedos, and I don't have to deal with them because I have my own pedos with my own culture. So all of my rant is to say that I have a very specific way of dealing with Latinx representation and queer representation, and that may seem anti-Latinx and anti-gay. That's your pedo. That's not my pedo, because that's not what I'm trying to say. That's not what I do. So if I say something, you're like, that's so anti-gay, then you have to go into a corner and reflect on that thought, because that's not my battle. That's never been my battle, and that will never be my battle. Am I going to be critical to the point that I'm going to make you uncomfortable? Yes. If you don't know how to deal with it, then sorry. So with that said,
let's do it.
Yeah, well, that's this is going to be a wild ride. I guess to segue into a little bit about what we're going to talk about today, it's going to involve a lot of trigger warnings, because the content and the films of the director that we're talking about today have a lot of really crazy stuff in general. But some of them specifically are like rape. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of incest. There's a lot of violence and murder. Right. I feel like you could probably just like name any trigger warning and it's probably in there. So
it's gonna apply. Yeah, it's gonna apply.
So just be warned ahead of time that content will come up in this. And also be warned that we're all, I think maybe since Fred Repeat that has like the most calm environment today, but we are in Mexican households and there will be noise.
Very Mexican households. We just spent an hour talking about El Niño de, ¿cómo se llama este güey? It's like a little Jesus figure. It's un niño de Michoacán, that it's like the baby Jesus, pero se lo turnan, güey. So like 1 year you keep the baby and you can sign up and you might not get that statue of that niño for 20 years. And people go to your house and like they fucking like lo arrullan y le cantan canciones y le dejan dinero y le dejan ropa. What? So that's how wild. Fucking Mexican this household is. I'm so happy.
Tell me about it.
I'm so jealous. Like, I'm sure those houses smell amazing and mine just smells like candles that I bought at the store. So anyways, jealous of all the food.
A lesbian household.
Like candles. Candles and like eucalyptus and
wow.
Just lesbian shit. Yeah.
Yeah, here's a combination of food and weed.
Perfect. Beautiful things.
Nice, yeah, nice. So with that said, there's a lot of noise, background noise. It's the nature of the beasts. We are, as Juan Mampoma, a chronicler from the 16th century in Peru, who was registering and writing about the conquest and how fucked up everything was for the Incas. He wrote, El mundo está al revés. The world is upside down. So everything that was norm is not norm anymore. So if you're uncomfortable with that, I'm sorry for you. Including noise.
Yes.
God, especially right now. Everything's pretty wild. and I don't know. I know that people are listening to podcasts a lot less because there's no commutes. And because, right. You know, visual stimulation is a lot more interesting than auditory only. But I still hope that the few people that are still listening to the podcast enjoy this shit and do a deep dive into Pedro Almodóvar today, like we have the last fucking 3 weeks. And
you're like, yeah, por favor, yeah!
Yeah, güey! So let's talk a little bit about Pedro Almodóvar, just as a person, maybe.
So Pedro Almodóvar, for the longest time, was my favorite filmmaker because I didn't know anybody else. Because I was dating a dude who didn't give a fuck about art or culture. So that was like my only escape to make him watch Pedro Almodóvar movies with me. Luckily, I married the opposite right now. And he is teaching me right. And he has taught me that Almodóvar is not unique. But still, I love Almodóvar. Pedro Almodóvar is a filmmaker from Spain. He is one of the leaders of La Movida Madrileña. La Movida Madrileña was a cultural movement in Spain that started after the fall of the dictator Franco. I remember I have a friend that used to go to Spain every summer, and he saw it all. He said, like, un día, un año, I will go, and everybody was into fucking, like, everybody was a hippie. And then the following summer, he will go, and everybody was into 70s music. Like, they lived the decades in a couple of years. So by the time they got to the 80s, everything was crazy. Everybody was just so eager to express their sexualities, like, freedom of expression, drugs, everything. So La Movida Madrileña, sometimes it's almost like a Spanish Dada movement, where, like, it's just about being young. It's just about being fucking crazy. No political shit at all. Yet, by doing that, it is one of the most political movements in Hispanic history, in the 20th century, at least. So Almodóvar's early movies are a representation of that, of the Movida Madrileña. And while a lot of things went down, Rock en Español came in and went out. You had people like McNamara, who shows in some of the movies, came in and went out. Almodóvar stayed. Almodóvar is like the Café Tacuba of the movement. Like, they started the movement and continue, and they're still present. So what is exciting about it is that you get to see that. You get to see from, like, the craziest fucking shit in the beginning of his career to some of the most lyrical and beautiful movies you've ever going to see in your life that were created in the past 10 years.
Yeah, and Almodóvar also, like, he went to, like, a Catholic school, basically, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken. And he was, like, his family wanted him to be a priest and all this shit, and he didn't want to be. And so his life kind of also paralleled that of Spain's, and that, and then he got out, right. And he, like, went out and went and did wild shit himself. So and God, I thought that was kind of cool.
And God bless, his parents fucked him up, because from that, the best fucking art was created. Sorry, no.
We love it.
Yeah, it's so good. It's super interesting to see. If you have not delved into Almodóvar, the three of us have been talking about how we should approach his movies, because it is by eras. And I don't know if there's a book out there, but I have, like, specific eras that I divided his career on, because, yes, I am that kind of nerd. and throughout regardless of the era, throughout the whole entire career, they're all meta. They're all about movie making. They're all about his life. They're all about his queerness. They're all about his relationship with women. They're all about Spain. And they're all about specific cities. And there's, like, details here and there that show you that out of all the city, Madrid is, like, the main character in all of these movies. So there's, like, very specific themes that after watching 2-3 movies, you realize that you're watching a long, long, decades-long movie.
And that made so much sense to me after watching, like, a dozen of his films, because I was always, like, I always felt like at the end of one of his movies, like, I wanted to watch another one, because I was like, this isn't done. I don't know. I never felt really complete after I watched one of his movies, with the exception of maybe Pain and Glory. And right. So it's been an interesting ride, but you're right. You have to watch so many of his movies before things start to click.
Yeah, because he references himself often, frequently, in every right. single movie. And I love that. That's kind of like, outside of making references to himself, he'll make references to old Hollywood, his old, like, even within a story, especially like Pain and Glory, but we're not there yet, so let me back up. But he references himself, he references old Hollywood. He's not original, like you said, but in some way, he's remixed all of those things and made it uniquely his, and that's what I'm obsessed with. Like, Pepe Lucy Bohm is the very first movie, and it's one of the most punk rock fucking movies I've ever seen in my life, and it's absolutely insane. I want to get y'all's take on his first, like, official, like, what is that? His student film, his underground film?
It's his first feature film. I think mm-hmm. he did one full-length film before that.
Yeah, and he did a lot of shorts, too.
He did
a lot of shorts, uh-huh. but he had one full-length film. But that one, I think, maybe was his student film. And then Pepe Lucy Bohm has that student film vibe, too, though.
Right.
That one, yeah, that, like you said, that was the beginning of his, of that experimental phase that Abelito kind of told us about.
Oh, and yeah, and it's interesting because it's also not in a vacuum, right? You think of John Waters. It always comes to mind when I think of that stage of Almodóvar. And not even because John Waters also has a long career, you could almost make those comparisons, but it doesn't develop the same way as did Almodóvar. But yes, like the Pink Flamingos, like some of those early John Waters movies remind me of this. So they have the same sense of like midnight movie type of deals where there's like no fucks given, where you can tell this is like a cis man in his early 20s just talking about whatever, you know, which again, it is part of the movida madrileña, but it comes with a fresh and amazing voice, but at the same time with a lot of fucking problems that have not aged very well. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, you've never seen this before, so I want to know what you thought.
So, one thing that I noticed, not just in this movie, it actually continued for a long time until maybe like the 21st century, really. He talked about rape even from this very first feature film. He brought that into the story, and it was too casual for me. I'd never seen it done so casually, and I was like, yeah, he's definitely like a cis man. Like he's talking about this way too casually, and it's a unique perspective. It's a non-biased, almost like I don't know. He doesn't have like a full-fledged opinion on it, and at the same time, he has so many opinions on it. I think it's just odd the way that he represented it for like 20 years in all his films. It just never seemed like. It was just different from any other kind of like depiction of rape that I'd ever seen, and not necessarily in a positive way. I was pretty disturbed at first. I can see why a lot of people were like, okay, fuck this at first. You see it change. He does eventually start to take the matter a lot more seriously, but we were specifically talking about Kika earlier, mm-hmm. Which is one of his later films, where once again somebody is raped, and there's a line that can be, you know, I think it doesn't necessarily come from a super smart place like this, but it does come from a very real place. Do you want to talk about that line, Frederpita?
Yeah, so the thing I found interesting about when he talks about rape and sexual assault, incest, these things aren't, to me, when I see a movie from like 1981 and I see a very casual conversation about something that's very serious now in, you know, 2020, but I think about like time and place and people and culture. So I'm assuming back then, like, he specifically had that point of view about rape and incest, and maybe the culture did. I don't want to say he's representative of entire culture, but maybe the people he was around. So maybe that movement saw, you know, rape as casual. But the thing that struck me most and why I didn't maybe find it as jarring later on, but those first depictions of rape and assault are like really fucked up to watch, honestly, like, you know, as a lot of things. It was hard at first, but then as you continue to watch it, what you're learning about this culture and this man is that, I mean, all these things always existed, whether, you know, since the beginning of time, people have been getting raped and assaulted and incest. All these things are real. All these things are true to humanity, to life. So it is disturbing if you can get past being disturbed. There's a very specific line in Kika that was said casually, but it held so much weight because after she gets assaulted, she says, you know, it happens to everyone, it was just my turn. And she said it so casually.
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of true to like being a human being in the world where cis straight men rule the world, right? Like, right. It's happening, it's been happening in the world, and it's something that all the women in this movie are saying without shame. They're saying this without kind of like the same hurt feelings that we're carrying around in real life. So I thought that was an interesting way to show someone surviving assault and casually just accepting it as kind of like human. I don't think it's right. I don't think it's human, right. You know, but it's real. It's happened. It's always happened. And this is how in the 1980s women dealt with it. And so that's it.
And there's two ways of understanding that. There's the point where it's unacceptable, that no matter when you make whenever you made movies, that kind of shit is unacceptable, right? Mm-hmm. But there's also the argument that, for example, I think about that scene a lot because the scene starts really disturbing where, like, she is opposed, obviously, of this man being on top of her. And I think you can see that. You can see in her eyes saying, fuck, well, this is happening, so now I'm going to take control of this. And you and the whole, and it doesn't get sexy sexual. Like, it never does at any single point. It just gets fucking a little too real, where the point that when she says that line, then you go back to that scene, not that you should, but you go back to the scene, and the development of that scene, it almost makes sense. And I don't want to give him the benefit of the doubt because I am privileged enough to say that I've never experienced that. So I cannot even imagine what it will be for somebody that did experience that, how they feel about it. But it's what we can say about it is that it's unique. And it's also to a point empowering because she takes control over the situation. But not everybody gets afforded that, right? Not just taking control over those situations is not necessarily a choice. So it's just so specific, so difficult to grasp. Yet at the same time, I don't know. Like, it's just interesting. It's just interesting because it sparks these types of conversation. And here we are, what is it, 20 or 40, 30 years later, and this still, that scene is still a thing. That scene, I still haven't seen anything like that in television or cinema.
No, yeah. It's grotesque to watch and think about. Right. But at the same time, like, that's reality, you know?
Yeah, so
I think it's crazy. Where people found it problematic was because he tried to use that scene, which was really long, like minutes and minutes and minutes long.
Right.
He tried to use it for comedic effect because this was pretty much during his funny phase where he was making funny films. And he wanted to take that horrible thing that was happening and, like, you know, at first this woman's reacting the way I guess women are expected to react when this happens to them, you know, fighting and being upset, and then tries to take control. And then, like, literally police are trying to, like, get him off of her and, like, are unable to, even though they have guns in their hands.
Right.
And then it just continues to escalate and escalate and escalate, and he keeps pushing it. And I think a lot of people didn't appreciate that. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't push boundaries that way, especially not now. It's a relic that can be talked about.
Right. Yeah, let's just say that. That it is a relic, that it's there for it to be talked. But the thing is that if somebody like that would have created that scene today, the career will be over. So absolutely. While I don't know if we need more scenes like that necessarily in television or movie.
Never again. No, I'm good.
Right. Yeah, I'm good too. And this is something that I fight with people and my students. Like, we always cancel out people for so many reasons. And for me, it's in art. And there's one specific figure, Gauguin, which is a painter from the late 19th, early 20th century. And he is known for going into these islands that were the Polynesian islands that were colonized by the French. And as a colonizer himself, he goes and paints the raw natural beauty of everything over there. We also know that he basically raped all, like, a bunch of native girls while he was there. I remember talking about him in class, and a student raised their hand, and they said, "Ay, pero his colors are so beautiful." And I was shooketh. I was like, after knowing this incredibly fucked up facts about this artist, we are still talking about him. And there was retrospectives in gigantic museums in France, and they're still happening today. So I truly believe that we can live without his colors. I don't give a fuck about his colors, right? Especially when we put these people in a pedestal. But if you think about it, these people that we put in pedestals is always depending on the canon. And if you dismiss the canon, then those people don't fucking mean anything. So that's what I try to do. So I dismiss the canon. So by the time I talk about these problematic figures, people are like, eh, we can leave them. We don't need them. And that could have happened to Almodovar. Given the beauty that he created a decade or so later, I'm so happy that that didn't happen to him, because some of his films are just like, to this day, are some of my favorite films of all time, and they're just breathtaking to me.
No, I mean, and that's the thing about him, though. He grew, he changed, his focus became more educated, the films grew as he did. So I allow him those mistakes, right? Because everyone, no one's perfect, everyone fucks up. But the fact that he actually grew and changed and developed all of those kind of scenes a lot more smartly, better written, with a lot more consideration for the survivor, for survivors, you know, because it was rough for me watching that early shit. But right. Once I got towards the end, I was like, okay, well, this isn't as triggering or traumatic anymore, but like, we're there. So it's, I give him that because he grew. People don't grow sometimes, but he did, so right. Here we are.
His perspective changed, because from what I read and what I looked into, especially in his first couple of decades of filmmaking, he knew what his job was. His job was to entertain.
Was to shock.
Yeah, to entertain. At the time, I think, meant to him, like, keep going, keep pushing, keep doing things that are going to keep people's eyes on the screen. It's it worked. You know, things like that. He didn't, and now, you know, all of us know better. We know that doesn't, you don't have to keep shocking people and keep doing that to entertain people. Sometimes you can just look inwards and create art, and that's good too, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and what I appreciate also from his early career is to look at his interviews. The interviews are equally problematic and equally crazy and shocking and funny at the same time. Like, he was always punking people. And of course, he's not the first one. Like, in Western, I shouldn't use that term no more. In like European and US culture, we've had figures like Andy Warhol, who just like punk people all the fucking time. Was he an artist or not? Like, who cares, right? That was part of his persona. That was part of his quote-unquote art. And Almodovar knew that. Almodovar knew that he was sort of like a Warholian figure that people couldn't fuck with. And people tried, and people tried, and people tried. And that is reflected on every single aspect of his movies, on his approach to that, on his approach of women-on-women relationships, both sexual and just regular, on his relationship to queerness. He subverts that. He subverts all of those ideas. And in the beginning, we're talking about how, yes, he's not unique, and he is a product of a lot of different things because he's a film person and he knows his references. But at the same time, I think of people like Douglas Sirk, who's like the straightest possible melodrama you can imagine. And Almodovar subverts that. But by, yes, there's like a lot of, like, most of his movies are like quote unquote straight. But he subverts the relationship both between men and men, women and women, and men and women. You know, it's just not, it's never just quote-unquote normal. Like, that's just not part of his vocabulary, and I love that. And in the beginning, I think it happens to all of us. I approach his movies because I had no references in Spanish of anything queer, and after a while I forgot, including my family. It became a thing that my mom and I will go watch the movies of Almodovar in the movie theaters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and, like, that shit was uncomfortable as fuck.
Yeah.
As a Mexican queer kid with my mother in the beginning, would be like, and to the point of my mama would be like, ya salió la nueva de Almodóvar, vamos a verla. Because I think the way that he approaches all of these topics, it's its own thing, that you're not going to go see a melodrama. You're not going to go see, like, a Hispanic story. You're not going to go see a race story or a queer story. You're going to go see an Almodovar movie. You know what I mean? And that's what, and very few people are allowed that, because, again, we have to, like, culture box us into categories. And Almodovar is somebody who's like, today I'm going to make the straightest fucking film, and tomorrow I'm going to make the gayest fucking film. And it's just me. You know, and I love that. But again, apparently only cis white men are allowed that privilege. So I don't know.
No, I feel that. Yeah, he absolutely does have a certain privilege that, like, if you look at it from, if you're watching his movies with the knowledge of who he is, you're like, okay, that's why he can do that.
Yeah, definitely. The day that our peoples can afford that, that will be the day. Yeah, and I think Almodóvar became the Almodóvar that we know today in the second stage of his career, which is kind of like after Women on the Verge. That movie is iconic. Easily, and you can ask for a lot of film people, that could be the movie. That and All About My Mother. If you could only watch two movies of Almodóvar, yep, those will be the two movies. I may disagree, but those are the movies that made him, that made Almodóvar the filmmaker that we know today.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with both of those. Cool. Those are so good.
We touched on the phases, the first one being experimental. Maybe we should like come back a little bit and talk about that phase, and then we can get into the funny phase.
Mm-hmm. So what other movies from that phase you all watched?
Labyrinth of Passion is the one that I got to.
I love Labyrinth of Passion. As fucked up as it is, it's telling so many different stories about a queer man who finds love with a woman, right? Like, mm-hmm. But I mean, I like that. There is no boundary. He's not like straight. He's not like just gay. You know, you're allowed to be a multitude of different things in that movie. And he's not just a prince, he's a rock star. Like, there's just so many layers to, like, what a person can be. And he says, I'm going to give one person, like, five different things. Go. And I love that. That's human. That's real. So,
but to what degree? That was more shocking than just a queer character. Because here's somebody that can go back and forth. And in a Spain, in a Catholic fucking Spain, after Franco, it's kind of like... Because even, like, I mean, it's hard for people to accept queerness, but at the same time, once they see it as a sexual category, then they can accept it, or being gay, not queerness, but being gay. Mm-hmm. And then here comes this gay, well, Freudian slip, here comes this guy telling you that it's not that easy, that it's okay if somebody turns gay and comes back to being straight, whatever the fuck that means. Mm-hmm. That will be more shocking. That will be more insulting to all those Catholic inquisitorial motherfuckers that are out there in the world, you know?
It's so easy for them to other just gay or just lesbian people and then just put them in that box. But then when somebody comes in, they're bi or something similar, right, they freak out to this day.
Oh, I'm yes.
Just saying. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, the beauty. Okay?
The beauty of what you just said, Pablito, is that even in that movie, he's in disguise. Like, mm-hmm. He literally has a wig on, and he's changing from the wig to his actual hair. And there's this duality with him, with this one character. I love it. There's layers, and he didn't even know. He probably didn't know. I don't know.
And then on top of that, he is a terrorist, which in a way he makes fun of that whole, like, xenophobia/anxiety of terrorism that already existed in Europe in the 80s, you know? So it's like los terroristas chiitas y los terroristas chiitas.
And every movie.
At first I was like, ay, Dios mío, of course he couldn't be perfect. But the more I will watch those movies, I'll be like, oh my God, he's making a really like harsh commentary on how we deal with that whole entire thing. It's like a fucking farce. It's a joke, you know? Mm-hmm. And he doesn't hide that. So you have, on top of everything, but you know what it is? Now that I think about it, it's to push on those fucking Catholics, because the basis of the conservative peoples of Spain, it's Catholicism. So how do you fuck with Catholics? It's by like pushing certain sexualities on their faces, and also pushing like other religious systems, you know? Like, he says them as a joke and people will be like, ay, que mello, you know? But like... It's really interesting because there's layers upon layers on those characters. And those characters suck. And that's what I like about Almodóvar. Like, they're all horrible fucking people, you know? There's no good or bad characters. They're just, like, like self-centered, egotistical, like, dumb asses that are just living their lives, But then he makes it a way where you fucking love them. And he kind of is like, I know, mames, wait, what do I like? Why am I rooting for this motherfucker, you know? But it's just like, it's human nature. Like, we're all a mess. We're a fucking mess.
What I think he does well is that he'll present you these mess of people, but then they treat each other with such kindness, right? Like,
right.
These friendships between sometimes. These women. Like, sometimes. Well, the friendship between women is what's good here. I don't know about everything else, but there's always, like, a bond between women in his movies, and whether it's healthy or not, that doesn't really come into question. It's just how these characters are treating each other, how they're respecting each other sometimes and doing a lot of other things other times. But it's still rare to see. And we were talking about this earlier because whenever he makes a movie, you don't really feel like a male cis gaze on it. I mean, you do, but then you really don't. Right. There's this kind of freedom between women that you don't ever get to see. And they're talking about things that don't necessarily always involve men, or maybe it's the violence caused by men, and they openly discuss this privately amongst themselves, and we get to see it. So it's like we're being let in to this very secret world, and they're saying things that people don't say. You know, it's not something you have a conversation about with your cousin or your, right. your tia, you know. But these are very, very intimate, crazy conversations, and I love it.
Yeah,
so that's the experimental phase. We didn't even mention in Pepe Lucy Bohm, like, the reason that I wanted to study this director, because that's his first ever feature film, and he decides to have, like, the wildest, like, lesbian relationship in it. Like, just some wild stuff. And
yeah.
You gotta Google it and watch it, because there's some good stuff in there.
Yeah.
It's stuff that, like, you just don't expect it. It's all so casually done. But yeah, so then the funny phase comes later, in the later 1980s, where Women on the Verge kind of puts him on the map, and then Kika, which we talked about a little bit already.
Yeah, I think Kika always towards the end of the funny phase, and Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown in the beginning of that phase.
He always has main... Women mainly at the forefront of this. I guess in Labyrinth of Passion it was a man and a woman, but there's just he said this in an interview that the reason that people don't ever look at his films or didn't used to look at his films as autobiographical was because he put himself in the shoes of women. And then, like, now that he is making ones that have men in them or star men, or really just the one, like, everybody's like, oh my god, he finally told us about us, and he's like, no, I've been telling you about me all along.
And that's that's the thing about Plain and Glory. I was just like, yes, it's a good Almodovar movie, but, like, I've seen this over and over again, and people were, like, going crazy for this movie, and I was just like, there's nothing I have not seen before in this movie. So I was actually like, because for the past 5 or 6 years or even more, for the past 10 years, I've been in Mexico when the movies comes out, and the movies come out of Almodovar. They're released here around November, and in Mexico they get released in July, and that's when I'm there. So I've been watching all these movies in Mexico with my friends. So we've been having these conversations for a long time, and we all come out of the movie and we're like, yeah, we were underwhelmed. We were completely, but it's not that it's a bad movie. It's just that we're fans and we know who he is. So he's been doing this shit for a long time. It's just that I think people dismiss him for a while. I think after Volver, like, that was, I mean, and I'm speaking in mainstream, that was his pinnacle, you know, like Oscars and this shit and that. And then after that, I don't think people saw him as original no more. But he's done so many great things. And after I saw that, I was like, no. But that autobiographical shit, in a way, starts around this same period of the funny period, you know?
Yeah. So I guess moving into the artsy phase, since you mentioned Volver, and then there's also All About My Mother. That was actually one of my favorite watches. It came out in 1999. Yes. And Volver is 2006. So it's kind of like more the era that I would actually watch movies in. Because I don't normally watch older movies. But Penelope Cruz starts being like a big focus. She starts being a recurring actress in his films around this time.
The first time we see Penelope Cruz is in The Law of Desire, I think is the name of the movie. That's and she
87.
She plays the mom. I think there's like a famous scene where she is giving birth in the bus. So that was the first time you see Penelope Cruz, but she becomes a regular, because that's another thing. She has they're self-proclaimed chicas Almodóvar, because they are in a lot of the movies. Like, you have the same characters, and when there's not a chica Almodóvar, people are like, "What? A new one?" Like, and the same thing with the dudes. But I think in terms of the actors, I think it's been mostly Antonio Banderas. I think he's the one who's been in like, oh my god, five or six of his movies. But yes, a mí me duele mucho ver a Penélope Cruz actuar en inglés. She's not good. Pero like, Almodóvar is so good that makes her good. Like,
that's funny.
Every time
she's been in six of his films.
Yeah, she's been in All About My Mother and La Ley del Deseo. I think it's I don't remember the name of the movie. Algo Carne Trémula, I think it's called. Sorry, that's what I meant. It's Carne Trémula. And then Abrazos Rotos. Ay, esa película la veo y caigo en un abismo de pasión. And then, he's been in a lot of them, but nothing like Volver. Volver will be like her main movie. But I think, let's talk about All About My Mother, because I want to know, because I think that's the movie that more than even Women on the Verge of the Nervous Breakdown, that was the movie that everybody saw. And then everybody learned about Almodóvar.
Yeah, I actually liked the movie more than I thought that I would. When I watched this movie, I realized one common thing in a lot of his movies, if not all of his movies. A lot of the really wild stuff happens at the beginning instead of at the end. Like in other movies, they build up to it. They have this like general structure of beginning, middle, end. The problem's usually right in the middle. With this one, it's just like you start off wild, and I think that's kind of the case with All About My Mother, especially. And yeah, I don't know. I did not know what to expect with a story about a pregnant nun and and all of that. But I started seeing a lot of, I don't know, repetitive things when I finally saw this movie. Like, he features a theater performance a lot in this. He has a lot of transgender women in this.
Right.
Like, a lot.
Actually hiring transgender actors.
Yes.
And actresses. Yes.
This is why I can forgive him.
Like, that's right. Solid.
This right. is why I forgive him. Okay.
Yeah, and it's also a very early depiction of, like, separating sexuality and gender.
Right.
Because all of these transgender women are not all into men. Like, it's not that simple.
Right.
Like, that's, and it's not a point in the story that they talk about. They don't get into the politics of any of this stuff. They're not sitting there like, oh, not all transgender women like men. You know, like, they're not sitting there talking about it at all. Like, it's just like a reveal. Like, yep, that was the mother.
But
you know,
but it's so interesting because we deal with that shit when Jenner came out as trans. That was the whole thing. It's like, you are trans
and
you have a girlfriend. Like, I remember reading about it, and it was just so motherfucking frustrating. So it's just, and that's the thing, like, we think we're so far ahead when it comes to queer representation, but it's just, and that gives you an idea of how far we are, you know.
I'd love to hear you guys' opinion on the HIV type of storyline in that, because that left me a little bit like, I don't know, like spinning. Like, there's literally like a nun who's pregnant, and she's like once again very casual about it. She's like, yeah, I'm pregnant. Could I stay here? Like, you're a nun, and yeah, okay. But I don't know. I'd love to know what you guys felt about it when you saw it.
You know, that's a good question, because I don't think he ever truly dealt with the AIDS crisis. because I know that affected the Movida community hardcore. So I don't know if he just tried to divorce himself from it, he was avoiding the subject, or this weird-ass situations was his way of approaching, this is the new normal, you know? Like, this is what it is, and it affected all sectors, you know? It wasn't, like, your typical love story between two, you know, like, cis dudes. Hashtag Philadelphia, the streets of Philadelphia, which is also with ¿cómo se llama?
Con Antonio
Banderas.
Yeah, yes. He was in it too.
Right. So, like, that was his way. Maybe that was his way of saying it. It affects nuns, bitches. So, like, get off of my case. I don't know.
Yeah. And he tries to really resolve it too with at the end of that story with the kid or whatever.
Yeah,
I think with this movie, it's my favorite movie from him. I've seen Pain and Glory. I've seen, you know, we've been there. But I think it's my favorite movie because he's combining everything that he's good at into this one film. Mm-hmm. Like, he has female friendship. He mentions, he's brought up HIV before, I think in Bad Education. He's brought up, like, HIV or just, like, drug use and what happens with that. He's brought up, like, psychological, like, character study, because the main character in All My Mother is the mother, and we deep dive into her, the way she feels, and it's very personal. We really get to see her point of view. And I think he's combining the craziness of the early era of his experimental phase, where crazy things are happening and people are reacting in the best way that they can, which in his early phase was very, you know, it was made to be a joke. And later on we get into All of My Mother, and it's not taken as a joke. It's taken as a serious thing she has to mourn, and watching what that means and what it looks like specifically for her. So I think he combines everything he's ever been good at into this movie, and it has all the lightheartedness that you need between these women, because they're all going through very painful things or just surviving and being a trans woman at the time. Like, that's insane. So that's one of my, it's hands down my favorite movie by him, and I'm gonna watch it over and over again. But I just think he's done it so well in this movie. I just, 5-6 manuses, like, he just
I can see why you love this, because, well, one, you're a poli sci major, and for a man that's not political in his film, this is the most political one. There's a monologue with a transgender woman who talks about the cost of all of her physical features.
Yes.
And she's like, the more money I spend, the more authentic I am, because yes, this is what I imagined for myself. And I was like, that's so political. And they even talk about starting to find the cure for HIV towards the end. Like, I'm like, that's political. And, like, I don't know. That this is the one where he gave in.
In Lagrado, it's probably my favorite character of all time of Almodóvar. That and Penélope Cruz's in Volver. Raimunda! But you have no idea. My husband and I quote Volver so much. We're all like, ay, qué pesado, Paco. or like, we're drinking and there's like two bottles of beer, like, ¿cómo dice? Te estás dando un homenaje. Like, there's just so many lines in that movie. But Lagrado is really, that monologue is amazing. There's also a scene where they're walking around and this girl doesn't have clothes. So Lagrado, who's like a transsexual worker, gives her clothes and she looks horrible. Pobrecita. And she's like, this is a real Chanel. And she goes, girl, there's so much hunger in the world. Like, why would I be wearing a real Chanel? And I'm just like, yes! It's so amazing. But to what you were saying, this is a quintessential Almodóvar movie. And I want to talk about his cinematography, because all the elements of Almodóvar lead to that movie. All the characteristics of the dialogues lead to that movie. So, for instance, I think more than the queer films, it is the films that they talk about the relationship between women and women and intergenerational women. Mm-hmm. Women, those are the ones where you swore this was created by a woman, right? There, I mean, and you can tell that he's look at his tías and sus primas y sus abuelas y sus madres.
Las vecinas.
Yeah. Las vecinas, las vecinas, right. And there's little things of that throughout all of his movies, you know? But All About My Mother, it's all about women. It's just all about women. So you have that. The element of melodrama. We love this shit as Hispanos. I mean, as Latinx, mm-hmm. because we grew up with telenovelas, right? We're used to like, y que se, este el señor de la casa embaraza a la sirvienta, and then they fire her, and then she's poor, and then this kid grows up, and one day he's cleaning windows in the streets and sees the father, and now they're the richest people, like just like wild ass.
You
fucking
should sell that story. Right? I would watch it.
I think I saw that movie. Yeah, in three different iterations.
I was gonna say like that's María de la del Barrio, but like those wild ass stories are. That's why you see like at all times you're like what, but it's pure melodrama, and that's something that it's ingrained in our veins since the 18th century in Latinx and Hispanic peoples, you know? So you have the women characters, the approach to melodrama, and the fucking cinematography. Like, there's the Carne Tremula is like this beautiful movie. There's like all these movies where he's doing like bold colors. He's like a very like, there's a lot of patterns in the compositions of his shots, but they come together as like a it's almost like it's like a student and he's in grad school for like the longest time, and then he puts together his solo show, and it's just the most beautiful thing. That's when you have the use of blues and reds. That combination comes back over and over again, patterns upon patterns. When you see that scene where they're talking about sucking dick, all the women in that room, there's like five different wallpapers in that scene. It's fucking beautiful. It's amazing. and they work. And so a lot, and elements, for example, when you have, there's a famous scene right before the son gets run over. She is in front of a poster, and there's like a huge, huge poster that comes back over and over again when he blows up art pieces. Beautiful. And they are the backdrop to some of those stories. But they're also like, they tell you what's about to happen in the story, right? And all of those elements, they are throughout all his career and in his artsy phase. Sometimes they're bold and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they disappear. But in All About My Mother, the cinematography, the melodrama, the relationship with women, and his approach also to queerness, it's just done in such a balanced way that in a way we haven't seen it since, even though I have other movies that I like more than that, but it's just like for entertainment purposes. But that's the movie. That's definitely the movie.
Yes.
He talks a lot about being very meticulous with all his sets, and like he has the set in mind when he writes a story, and like that's important to him. And he also talked about like if you can see the book, like, and there's a even a possibility that you can read
book
is like that he picked it up personally, and it's probably from his personal collection. And he also says like that nothing goes without his approval, the set design. I've never heard of a director being that meticulous about set design of all things, but he definitely is. And he also talks about the colors and how he designs it in a certain way because he doesn't want you to have whiplash visually, and he wants it to be like a smooth ride all the way through, or he wants you to see what you're supposed to see type of thing.
And you see that there's like elements to all the floral patterns throughout all his career. But it's just like they just come together as like its own thing, like as an actual like an Almodóvar movie. But and also another thing, the aspects there are so meta that it's about performers, right? And it's about theater, it's about filmmaking. And you see that throughout his career, because there's especially in the experimental phase, it was about it was about art kids being art kids. And this is about film characters being film characters. And and that's something that back and forth, and but not like we see it with this All About My Mother. And I meant to do this and I forgot, but we can come back again. At the end of All About My Mother, he lists all the actresses and actors that he influenced him, including Betty Davis, because All About My Mother, it's all about Eve. When I saw All About Eve, I was motherfucking shooketh. I was like, what the fuck? This bitch is not original. Give me my money back. But in retrospect, I was like, no, that's beautiful that you have this guy looking at Betty Davis, like I think is my favorite actress of all time, just doing it in a very fucking Hispanic way, to for lack of better words. You have those influences, and he doesn't hide them. And then they actually are in the movie, they're playing ¿cómo se llama la película where they grita Stella?
Oh my God. A Streetcar Named Desire.
Exactly. They're recreating Streetcar Named Desire. So all of that is there, and then it's just so great. It's so good. The way that he approaches it, and I love that he doesn't hide it.
Absolutely. Another thing that he does a lot in his film is repeat things, but with different characters. Like, history repeats himself with different characters. That's very apparent in All About My Mother, and it's also really, really apparent in the movie literally called Volver, because they're gonna volver it. It's gonna volver to happen.
And so in Volver, which is my favorite, I think it's one of my top three films of all time. Volver, by the way, my favorite film of all time is called Nazarín, because my favorite filmmaker is Buñuel. I mean, he is...
Which he was inspired by.
Yeah. Right. Oh, my God. Buñuel is, like, the biggest fuck you to all the fucked up things that are about being Mexican. But anyway. so, ¿qué estaba diciendo? Me emocioné when I was talking
about... Volver. It repeats its stories over and over again.
No mames, ya estoy viejito, se me borra el cassette. Okay. So, Volver it is. So, you have a couple things that vuelven. The story of Volver was written as a novel that this writer in La Flor de Mi Secreto is writing. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a famous scene. She's like, how the fuck are you going to write about this dad getting the daughter pregnant, blah, 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 blah. He's like, I am not going to publish this novel. And then that's exactly what they talk about in Volver Una. The actress Rosa Maura, I forgot her name. The actress
Carmen
Maura. Mm-hmm. She had like a fight with Almodóvar, and she comes back, and he's so fucking extra. And of course, the whole entire time you're waiting and trying to see está viva, está muerta, es un espíritu, but it's the way of Almodóvar bringing back that chica Almodóvar again into his movies. So you do have a lot of elements that come back. But in terms of original dialogue, which he tells you throughout his movies, there's a movie where the writer is reading newspapers, and he's reading the sections, La Nota Roja, where like the wildest, weirdest murder scenes are happening, and he's cutting them, and he's pasting them into his own story, and he's writing them. And he's telling, and the same thing happens. that comes back in the one with Gael Garcia. What's the name of the movie?
Oh, Mala Educación.
Y en La Mala Educación, he's also writing in the same way as you see in the earlier movie. And even though he doesn't tell you how he wrote this story, it is the best written story that he's ever done, in my opinion. Like, it's just like... Ay, Dios mío, es que me gusta tanto. I don't know, like, I'm always going to be biased. I quote that motherfucking movie over and over and over again. I really do think it's his best, ¿cómo se llama?
Like, narrative
plot.
Screenplay?
Screenplay, yes. I really do think it's his best screenplay.
That's interesting. Yeah, I started to see that, like, a lot of the characters, they just... they basically go through the exact same thing in All About My Mother. What the person that gets... the main character pregnant gets an unpregnant, you know, like, mm-hmm. And you find out these, it's just like life repeating itself, and then he literally repeats the names, the children's names keep being the same, like, I don't know.
It is insane, and I like that, because when you see that, let's call it the Almodóvar movie, when you see all of it, you get a sense of how a movie is made, including the writing, including the development of the relationships, including the cinematography, like Los Abrazos Rotos, Broken Embraces. It's about that. It's about this filmmaker that goes blind, and his most important film was never created. And he takes you through the whole entire editing process of how he went from the worst movie he's ever made through the best movie he's ever made. And the editing process goes along the actual love story. It's a gorgeous movie. So it's super meta in that regard. But that's why All About My Mother is so good, because all of those elements are there without telling you in your face, like in other movies, you know?
No, and that's why when you said about Pain and Glory not being anything, and I agree, because we've already seen that movie. I saw it and I was like, it's cool, but like Julieta, he was doing something really, really left, like different from what he does.
Okay, girl, let's talk about Julieta. Porque Julieta, I went to see Julieta y me quedé así, güey. Me quedé estático.
Dije, I mean, who wouldn't? That shit's sad.
I was like, so what did I just watch? Porque the whole, because I'm this morbid motherfucker, and I'm used to fucking Almodóvar being a mess when it comes to his stories, and I'm just like, la va a violar. Oh my God, es el papá. No, 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 se me hace que es la mamá. Like, I was waiting for that Almodóvar moment. Y luego se acabó la película y yo, no mames, güey, ¿dónde están mis 50 mil pesos? Like, I was almost mad because I didn't get the Almodóvar. And we actually walk like 30 minutes from the residency, the artist residency that I stay when I go to Puebla. Shout out to Arquetopia and to the movie theater. And the whole 30 minutes, we were just like talking about the movie nonstop. And we're like, I kept waiting for that Almodóvar moment. But I also, that's why I love Julieta over Pain and Glory, because that was, to me, that wasn't the introduction to his last, to his, what the era that he's doing right now, which are like much slower. The stories are about the same shit as they were before, but much more detail. And it's a different approach to his movies. But I was so hungry for a new Almodóvar, because prior to that movie was I'm So Excited. That movie is pure trash. I just did not like it at all. That's the only movie that I can say I don't back. I didn't like the whole thing. But I mean, he wanted to be campy again. He wanted to go back to that funny Almodóvar. Pero fell, miserably fell. So I was just hungry for another Volver. So when I saw it was going to be a movie about women, and I'm like, yes, here we go. And I didn't get that. And I was like, que la chingada. Y ahora que me tengo que esperar otros 3-4 años. But the more I thought about it, and then I watched it again, I was like, no mames, wait, this movie is fucking gorgeous. I loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it.
I think it was just, like, well done. I'm sorry, Mente, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, you're good, you're good.
Yeah, I just thought it was, like, a well-done movie, and the fact that it wasn't, like, an original screenplay, it was an adapted screenplay from Alice Munro novel.
Right.
Or short. And then he changed it, culturally, even, because it's, I think, British or something else, and he changed it to match Spanish culture, and for it to still include queer women, it centers women. I mean, she's a heterosexual woman. She's into dudes, I guess, sadly. And we get to see just like a different side of him that he hasn't really explored to that extent. I mean, he had a very small stint of sadness and All About My Mother and all these other themes, but now he's focusing on this loss, this total loss between a mother and a daughter. And I thought that was like
gorgeous.
It was gorgeous. It was interesting. It was different. It's not something he's done before. And right. to have just so much silence, so much quietness. I think he uses a lot of blues and greens in this movie. Mm-hmm. just the theme, the idea of shutting someone out completely, instead of his movies are so much about, you know, some kind of aggression, some kind of like excitement, lie, it's alive, and this movie was just so the opposite of that, and it was beautifully shot too. So I don't know, did you see it, Maite?
I did see Julieta, yeah. Babalito, you describe this kind of era, and I think it kind of starts with The Skin I Live In
as yes, his like, right.
psychological narratives era. Mm-hmm. And that's in 2011. This is a little bit like after his mom died, right?
I think so. I'm not sure.
Because to me, I look at it as his grief era. Mm. That's when his characters really start grieving. Yeah. Literally starting with The Skin I Live In, which to me was the biggest change that I saw in his career, because he starts doing non-linear storytelling.
That's right.
He, like, and that's his new way of Almodovar-ing the film, because he starts it off and you're rooting for him to be with this lady or for her to escape or whatever it is, and then he tells you the backstory, you know.
But it's still meta as fuck. That's Kika. Mm-hmm. The Skin I Live In is Kika, and they even have the same characters. Yeah. With, like, the fucked up son and everything. Like, it's Kika Dan in this new era.
Brother. Uh-huh. That's just the brother from
Right,
Kika.
The brother coming back and doing some wild shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it still has, like yeah, there's still these little things in this weird film, but it's almost like, I feel like the most Americans really would probably talk about this film, because it gives me American vibes, like a super rich doctor with a freaking OR in his house, you know?
Well, it's based on, like, a short novel. I think it's actually, like, French or Italian or something like that.
But it's, so it's I don't know the term, Hitchcockian.
Damn. Yeah, I think that sounds right. Yeah, he tries to do a form of horror.
Yeah,
sort of.
And
but yeah, it's all about grief, right? Like, he's grieving, the main character, Antonio Banderas' character, is grieving like mad. And yeah,
I told you, that's one of the movies that I saw with my mother in the movie theater. Y la pobrecita estaba tan perdida. She was just watching and watching and watching. And there was like 10 people in the movie theaters. And then at one point she literally screamed, "A poco es él!" Like that. I was like, God, that's
exactly when she did that. Dang.
Yeah, because you're so confused as to, like, why this character is, like, not connecting with this person.
And it's super Almodovar. Like, that's another way to talk about trans, but not in an easy way, not in a typical way. Not like, because, man, like, we're real people and we all have different stories and we all don't fit in the same fucking categories and boxes, you know? And he reminds you of that all the time. So maybe that's why I'm not as attracted to, like, the super queer movies of him, because when they're super queered, it's, like, the opposite of, like, what I'm expecting from him, to give me, like, el otro lado de la moneda, or, like, the more nuanced, complicated side about being queerness that sometimes can be super heteronormative and sometimes could be like, what the fuck just happened, you know? And I like that. I like that because that, I think it's more true to the world, and I think it's more true when we watch that stuff, because we are different and we also don't fit those categories, but we are pushed through media, through, like,
society,
through the empire, yeah, to say that we gotta be this, you know? And when you're not, like, the deprime, like, for me was like getting fucking personal. For me was very complicated growing up queered Mexicano, because, like, it was either rejecting who I was, or it was like mainstream gay culture, and I ended up hating it for a long time. And that's why Almodóvar was such a big deal for me, because it was punk before queer, it was punk. And I was, in a way, I pushed myself away from the queer community, where I was just like, I love that. I punk and queer. What the fuck? Like, I love this, you know? And now it's different. Like, now there's, like, spaces like that exist in the world where you can perform your identity in different ways. But para mí, like, that wasn't even an option. And there was, like, a self-hatred happening with me when I was a teenager. But it was that, because I felt like I didn't belong in la mexicanidad. I didn't feel like I belong in the gringadidad. I didn't feel like I belong in the queerness. And the only way that I could express my angst was through music. It was through, like, punk. And to this day, it's that, you know? And I think coming back to the beginning, what I was saying, I think my pedos con representation started from that, because I grew up in a place and an era where we didn't have choices. Like, what is the identity that I'm going to perform today? You know, let me go to Instagram to choose. I didn't have that. And Almodóvar was the first thing where I was like, this is getting closer to how I feel. Like, this is getting closer to my fucking anger, you know? And I didn't know how to express it. Now, of course, like, I'm like 40 and I'm beyond that, but I'm very thankful that I had that, that at the end of the day, when I was never represented, I knew that in 2 years an Almodóvar movie was going to come out and things will be right, you know? So,
well, that's like the beauty of him. He, whether you, like, for me, anything he does is going to be queer, but I don't have, like, these labels or these boxes. Right, I don't give a fuck. Like, fuck all the boxes, fuck all the labels. Just be who you are, and then you're gay too. You know, like, and that's who he is. He's always been that. He's always just been like, I am all of these things, and also I'm this queer thing too, by the way. You know, and he's like, he casually puts queerness everywhere. And to me, that's the most, like, honest way to put queerness, is just casually, just throw it in there. Just don't even make a scene about it. There's no fucking, like, after school special about, like, why they should be queer. They just are. And that's been the beauty of all his movies, is that his lens isn't even necessarily like this cis male lens. It's not a female lens. It's not, it's just this third thing. And I fuck with it. I don't care. You know, he can go crazy because his view is very, very much just rooted in whoever the fuck he is. And that's so opposite of mainstream. So,
and, yeah, props. Absolutely. I agree. And one thing, I guess one last aspect of his movies that we haven't touched upon, is his relationship with music. He, as part of La Vida Madrileña, he was a punk artist. He was in a band called, ya se me olvidó, Los Zombies, wasn't maybe? It? I forgot the name of the band. But they had a song called Esto es una monja. Boom, boom. Esto es un jamón. Like, it's just, it's a song about
monja jamón.
Monja jamón, because it's just like the same word, but backwards. So it's about ham and about a nun. And somehow it's super Almodóvar, you know what I mean? And then for a while during his artsy era, there was spotlights of music. There is a famous scene in Talk to Her, about, where you have Caetano Veloso singing Cucurru Cucu Paloma. Bitch. Mm. Bitch. 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 Un pinche brasileño cantando una ranchera de una con, como jazz, just with a fucking, oh, no. That is an, and even, it gets so meta that they talk about it. He goes, ay, güey. El Caetano Veloso me ha puesto los pelos de punta, he says after he hears that song. That is the first and probably last, no, the one out of two soundtracks I've ever bought in my life. That was the first one, and the second one was the about the movie Frida. Trash movie, great music. and then you have Buica, that is an awesome, I think she's Afro... ¿cómo se llama? Afro, not Latina, Afro Gitana. And she is...
In The Skin I Live In?
In The Skin I Live In. Yeah.
So that was beautiful.
That was a beautiful scene. And she, like, Google her. She's fucking amazing. And she performs a lot in the United States. So there's always an element of music. And that's why I say he's so meta, because without even knowing, he's taking you through all the stages of filmmaking, from writing to the music, you know?
I gotta say, this is gonna transition me into Pain and Glory, which I know wasn't, like, the favorite of Almodóvar films, but it kind of encapsulates everything that you just said, because that was him deciding to make a new movie. And that's what the entire movie is, from the first scene where he's where Antonio Banderas is basically Pedro Almodóvar in a pool, and he's just trying to not feel pain. And in that moment, when he stops feeling pain, he pictures something from his past and decides that's probably going to be in a movie. And then it gets musical too, because then he's with his mom, and he's with the vecinas, and La Rosalía starts singing and makes me want to cry a little bit. And shit, fucking Rosalía. And she starts, she's just, it's like he's a little boy and he's with these women. And it's an element that doesn't continue throughout the whole movie, because this movie is like three movies in one.
Yeah.
Right.
But
go ahead.
But that's, he's basically going through the process, right? Because that's step number one, is he thinks about his past, and then he thinks about his relationships to people, and then he, like, goes back and forth, and then he starts shooting it, you know? Like, I feel like all of Pain and Glory was him deciding to make a movie.
Yeah, it's interesting. And before I forget, there's two more music scenes that I forgot. One is en la flor.
Volver.
Pero, espérate, güey. Una es en la flor de mi secreto, where todas las señoras están tejiendo. That scene is fucking beautiful. But yes, the worst lip sync in Spanish history.
When I heard it, because I wasn't looking at the screen, when I heard it, I was like, that's not fucking Penelope.
But no. I mean, she might be a good actress in Almodovar movies, but that's it.
Damn.
But that's it. Like, but I love that song. I love that song, pero sí, like, pena ajena, you know? Yeah, especially especially after, because that came right after Talk to Her. That came after Caetano Veloso, you know? By the way, Caetano Veloso was supposed to perform in Chicago, and then Chicago is this city of protests, of, like, laborers, and they all went on strike, and they canceled my concert, and I was like, chingues, I've been waiting all my life to see Caetano Veloso. Anyway, something different. Go ahead.
No, and then I was going to say that he also brought, like, Chabela back into the mainstream.
That's right. That was, like,
a big deal for me.
Right, yes. And like, he had her perform for Pride in Madrid. Like, that's so fucking badass. That I love Chabela, because Chabela, speaking of, like, not trying to box ourselves, es costarricense.
Yep.
He's a dude. Like, Chabela Vargas is a dude, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's a dude singing rancheras. He's like this machista dude, you know, that happens to have a pussy. And he got famous again because of a Spanish filmmaker. Like, what? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, needless to say, there were some amazing lesbian like political figures that brought her back, and I'm thinking of Liliana Felipe and the wife. Mm-hmm. I forgot. There's like a documentary that tells you all about it. By the way, have you listened to Liliana Felipe? Liliana Felipe, I have all her albums. No, she's amazing.
We're gonna have to do our Googles there.
Yeah, she's amazing. Yo. And they actually got married, like, her and her wife, Liliana Felipe y se me va a acordar del nombre. They got married and they made it public. They both dressed like brides, but como calaveras, before everybody was into this coco bullshit. They did some cool statements, and they're the ones who brought her back, not into the mainstream, but into peñas, into like the bar scene of Mexico City again. And then Almodóvar's been using, I think, Kika. I think there's like three movies where you see a music scene with Chabela Vargas. Ay, pero mira, yo escucho a Chabela Vargas y caigo en un abismo de pasión, de tristeza, de dolor, same, de todo, güey, de todo, 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 todo.
You can't do it without getting very, very drunk and always crying. Like, you have to.
I'm furious because of fucking coronavirus. They had to stop doing the theater show that we were talking about a while back called Chicanas, Cholas y Chisme.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one of their little scenes that they did, that they performed in LA, was all about Chabela, where she's being a man and she's getting drunk and she's
being problematic,
a bunch
singing
of women, like a bunch, and she's fighting with the bartender and exactly what you described. And it was the most amazing depiction that I've ever seen of it. Seeing that live was actually, like, they even sang. Like, it was absolutely breathtaking. And this show only got to last for, like, a week and a half because of this bullshit.
Mm.
To me, Chabela is like Juan Gabriel, where you have, with Juan Gabriel, you had the straightest dudes singing about the gayest shit. The same thing with Chabela. Chabela will be like, ponme la mano aquí, Macorina. Like, it doesn't get queer than that. Like, and I love that. And there's she only sang one song that she wrote. It's called Teposteca. Listen to that song. It's a gorgeous Teposteca linda de pezón erecto. It's so good. It's so good. Yeah, it's so good. But yeah, and that's the thing. Like, there's so many aspects with Almodóvar. And of course, there's 1,000 filmmakers, and we can all give them the benefit of the doubt, and they're all problematic. But to me, even though I don't fucks with Almodóvar as I used to, because now, like, I have been open up with my husband to, like, a world of cinema, literally a world of cinema, where, like, maybe two months ago, we just watched movies by this Japanese director called Ozu. I think I watched like 10 of his movies. And that's how that's what I did as a teenager with Almodovar. So even though I don't fuck with him as hard as I used to, like, I'm so happy he came into my life when he came, because he reassured my hate towards the world, my hate towards, like, all this fucking, like, aspects of culture where I just didn't belong to, you know? I mean, I was like, fuck it. I have an Almodovar and you can have your, I don't know, like, Boy George or whatever, you know?
Ooh. Shade. I love it.
Anyway.
You know what I was thinking about? This is a little, like, off the conversation we were just having, but I was thinking about how Almodovar's films haven't, they've changed, but they haven't, like, throughout the years.
Right.
He's like he's an 80s forever kind of guy.
Right.
Like, it's never going to stop being the 80s for him. And it's because of what we talked about at the beginning about him, you know, finally, and him and Spain finally being free during this era. And then it got me thinking, like, what the fuck are we going to be like after, like, 2 or 3 months of quarantining? Like, are we all going to turn into, are we just going to be in, like, a post-COVID world forever? Or what?
Probably.
Are we even going to make it that far? I'm just like, oh, we're going to have our Almodovar moment, and I'm just curious what it's going to be like.
For me, it happened yesterday. I literally just, like, cried all day. And I spoke to, one of my best friends in Arquetopia. He's like, it's a new era and we don't know it, but it already started. Just like we talked about post 9/11, we're going to talk about post coronavirus, and everything's changed. Everything has forever changed, and it's good and it's scary. Good because for the first time in history, we're watching capitalism crumble, you know, and I'm here for that. I am
globally here for that. Everywhere.
When you see TV commercials, and you can blip this, when they said hotels.com, stay at home, that's when you're like, yes, bitch, and nothing's working. But at the same time, it's like people are coming out with scary ass fucking strategies to push people to keep consuming. You know, that's why everybody's Texas. Going crazy about these paychecks, because we have been conditioned to think that $1,000 are going to solve this bullshit. I feel it and I am embracing it. I'm pushing it. Like, I'm working on, my husband and I are working on a YouTube channel. I think it's the perfect time, not because it's going to give me more viewers, but because of what's happening. I think it's a good time for me to start these conversations outside of the podcast world as well. So I am happy and excited, scary, because great things can happen after this, or the scariest things are going to happen after this. And
probably both.
Yes, and we gotta be ready. We gotta be ready. Just like when we all were fucking crying because Trump got elected. Like, we should have been prepared for that election. We should have been prepared for the consequences of that election. So while you're at home watching your fucking Netflix shows about glorifying white crime, you know what I mean. You should be thinking about these things, because by the time you go outside, it's not a time to get fucking crazy and get drunk because you have been inside for hours. It's time to make a change. And this is really a call. It's fucking time to make a change.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Almodovar with the film All About My Mother, let's get political. It's time.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, because I don't know, like, I just don't think anything, like, from personal relationships to the way we understand the empire. I mean, as I'm saying, like, I love to see, when I saw, like, Tony Blair or whatever his name is from England, I forgot his name.
You're good. He's a white man. We don't remember white men.
Yeah, who cares?
You're good.
When I was like, oh, he went into intensive care, I was like, ay, Diosito Santo, por favor. I was just waiting. Mi mamá dice, no le desees la muerte a nadie, pero hay gente que se debe morir. And
I mean, they will. They will. Everyone will.
But you know, so. Sooner than later, girl. Sooner than later.
Sooner than later.
And to be able to see that, it's a gift. It's almost like como dice my husband, como dice Manuel, he's like, this last season of the world has lasted way too long.
Oh my God.
But yeah, it should be a call. It should be a call. And I think not even thinking about it, I've gotten some big, like, wake up moments in the past month. and I'm ready, and I'm content, and I'm here to keep talking about this shit and to be more political than ever. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of horrible, like a lot of us have the privilege of being at home and creating right. shit, mm-hmm. even though we're sort of maybe panicking in the inside. A lot of people are suffering really, really badly, and the situations are really dire in certain areas. And I hope that that shit is absolutely publicized, and the failures of all the parts of this country and other countries are publicized, and we can get to work.
Hopefully we become radicalized. Well, I mean, we are, but everyone else.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, we're a smaller percentage of the world than I ever realized until now.
Yeah, it's tough, man. For everybody... for everybody who's like been fighting the fight, who's been being loud to try to combat what colonization has been doing for
ever
600 years, right? For forever, you're not alone, and this is a fucked up fight. But hopefully, this is a good opportunity for us to think about things in a different way. I know I have, and this is not for me to say that I'm better than other people or whatever. It's just that I'm 40. I'm not 40, but I keep saying that. So by the time I turn 40, people are like, oh, you're only 40? So I don't know, just like I think about it, those things. And that's and with that, it's saying that's has been my relationship with Almodóvar, that while like I may not be like dying for the next Almodóvar movie because I don't need it in my life like I used to, I have a different approach to him. And I think that it's important to talk about this type of filmmakers and this type of media, but be critical. Otherwise, nothing is going to fucking change. And even if you label as a hater, I know, I'm fucking tired, but it's necessary. It's necessary. One time we did a presentation, and an audience member was like, so you're not happy with anything. So there's basically not ever a good show. And I was like, no. and it's like, it's a sad reality. But I mean, there's like brilliant moments here and there. And like you guys were like big proponents of the continuation of One Day at a Time, you know, like so there's like little things here and there that we can grab onto, pero ay güey, neta que estoy cansaico, como diría un character of Almodóvar. cansaico.
Yeah, no, I get it, absolutely. We're all worn out.
Yeah, sure. I veg out and watch everything except stuff with black and brown people. I just watch a lot of High Maintenance whenever I have free time and just zone out. Yeah, because, I mean, and hopefully, I don't know what's going to happen after this, but we're realizing that this is probably like the late stage of capitalism, and we don't know mm-hmm. what other systems work for a society. So this is the new world. We're trying to figure out something after capitalism, something after monarchies, oligarchies. What is the next system? And we have to create it, but we have no idea how, and we're so disconnected, and we're all just dying and trying to pay bills. So it's so many things layered that an average human being is not going to spend all their time doing. But now everyone's being forced to live under the same kind of condition inside. Those of us that are lucky, so hopefully outside, once we are allowed back outside, if we ever are, like, people join together, people start changing things, people start realizing capitalism didn't ever work, ever. So, I don't know.
A finicky little system, for sure.
Yeah. I'm ready. I'm so pessimistic that I'm just like, as long as there's, like, power for grabs.
As long as there's internet, we're internet people, so it's like...
True. And no, like, but everybody's like, yeah. Oh, I can't wait to go outside. I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm good.
I'm chilling.
I get to do like record episodes like this. Do my like I am recording all of my classes, and they're part of like the YouTube channel that I'm starting, and my students are engaging like never before. I was like, who knew? So let's I mean, hopefully they find a cure. That's not what I'm saying. But you know,
yeah,
absolutely. I'm good inside.
We need to get over the pandemic, but yeah, it also makes me think, like, damn, like, if I were one of these fucking celebrities in one of these mansions that didn't have to worry about losing their apartment or anything like that, then I would be pretty chill with this life. Like, not 100%, but, you know, I wouldn't be that bad off, that badly off. But not everybody gets that, which sucks.
Right.
I miss my friends. And I want to make movies, so I need this shit to end.
I heard you.
Bueno, pues. Speaking of capitalism, we on Patreon, we made the last two episodes available for free because we think you guys should listen to those. So check that out on patreon.com/CYC podcast. Free. You don't have to pay shit. Okay, cool. Babelito, where can the two people that don't know support you? I know you have your YouTube channel. You don't do social media anymore, but you do have a podcast.
Yes, so I have a little podcast with my co-host, Fabi Fav. He's the famous one. but you can find us on Latinos Who Lunch anywhere, on Instagram, on Twitters. You can find me at... I don't have, like, seriously, ever since I quit social media, even though a veces me entra el morbo y le entro al chisme, but for the most part, I'm not. You can find me at the webpage of the school where I'm teaching at. Right now I'm in transition. Right now I'm a visiting professor at the University of Illinois, Chicago. And Fabi's always like, do not say, like, your email. But my email is eortega@uic.edu. I am a nerd. You want essays about La Movida. You want essays about Almodovar. You want essays about Chavela Vargas. I'll find them. I'll help you find them. Sometimes I answer right away. Sometimes I don't. But there's ways to reach out to me outside of social media. I feel like I'm going to have to go back to social media. Pero de veras no quiero. Desde que no tengo... Desde I don't open my shit. Like, I feel so happy. Like, I'm not worried, you Dude. Know? And yeah. Not it's to depressing. Say that it's not important. Like, social media is essential right now. It's important. But I can't. Anyway, but also... Go to YouTube, go on Settling Journeys, and I started to post my classes, so if you want to take a free class, you can. I teach Latin American colonial art, but also we are about to start a series of videos on the art history of mestizaje, among other topics. And I'm hoping that by the end of the month, we're going to have the first video, which is an introduction to what Unsettling Journeys is, what my husband does, what I do, and then we hopefully are going to start adding content. What I want is a platform to continue this conversation. So I'm trying to put together a symposium, a virtual symposium on Native resistance. That's gonna go on the channel. And little things here and there where the idea is to take these conversations outside of the classroom. You don't have to be a privileged person with money to go to college to be able to learn about who Guamampoma is. And Guamampoma, yes. You don't know who Guamampoma is. I'm not going to say Google it. Go to Unsettling Journeys and you can find out more about it. Yeah.
Awesome. Bueno. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us and for helping us learn more about this director that has been around for decades and decades. And I feel like he just got a second wind. So we're probably going to get some more.
Yes, I can't wait. I really can't wait to be more of a hater in the future.
Yeah.
But I'm also very happy. Thank you so much. I've been one of the reasons why we started Latinos Who Lunch is to do something like this. But our careers, thankfully, have exploded. So we haven't had the chance to sit down and watch 20 movies about Almodovar. And it's been a little complicated, but you guys made my dream possible. So thank you. Thank you. It makes me want to go watch an Almodovar movie right now.
Yes.
So thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you for everything, for being in Latinos Who Lunch and being on this podcast. Thank you.
For finding us.
For listening to us. What? That was wild.
Al contrario. Muchas gracias. Las quiero, amigas.
Okay, guys, follow us, CYC Podcast, on all social media and leave us a rating and review and do that for Latinos Who Lunch too.
Five stars.
And,
five stars.
Solamente.
Bye, guys.
Ciao.
Bye.